You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for December 23rd, 2016. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from Chapter 1 of Donald Trump and the Half-Blind Trust. It's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal. Hey, Blue Gal.
Hi, we have to give a hat tip to Bob for that. I stole that, Donald Trump and the Half-Blind Trust, off the internet.
Way to go,
one
Bob.
One of our listeners. Thank you so much for that.
And I got a joke for you.
You do have a joke for me. Go right ahead.
I got a joke for you. In honor of Kellyanne Conway being named a Trump senior advisor, I hear that in the White House, in addition to the men's stall and the women's stall, there will now be a Leni Riefenstahl.
Ba-dum-bum.
Ba-dum-bum. Hey, look it up, people. History, humor, the whole smear right here. Yeah. This is our Christmas Eve podcast. The Eve of Christmas Eve podcast.
It's a good thing Kellyanne Conway's had all four of her children. She can't name one after the Führer.
Yeah. Little Dorothy.
Donald is right here. Yeah.
I'm sure she can get a full, full back tattoo of Donald Trump grabbing someone's pussy, grabbing the Statue of Liberty's pussy.
Honest to God.
Yeah.
What is with her? And yet she gets an hour on Rachel Maddow, so.
Which I didn't watch.
We didn't watch it.
I'm just allergic. I can't watch Kellyanne Conway lie to me. I've reached the saturation point where I just, nope. I know she's going to lie.
Yeah.
And I know Rachel will be awesome and catch her out and make her look silly. But here's the thing. Kellyanne Conway is a Terminator. She's made of liquid metal bullshit. And it doesn't matter what you do to her today. She will reconstitute tomorrow.
Yep.
And she'll be right back at it and with no consequences.
No consequences.
I did read the timeline on the Twitter. And of course, all the usual people on the left, like such as myself, were like, Rachel really gave it to her. Rachel did awesome. Great journalism, Rachel, which is, I'm sure, true. If I'd seen it, I would agree with it. But everyone on the Trump side was, Kellyanne destroyed Rachel Maddow, really wrecked her, ruined her. She was polite and Rachel. And you there's no reaching these people anymore. And there's nobody in the middle other than Ron Fournier who should, walk east till his hat floats.
It's not a long tweet. Could you read Ron Fournier's tweet to us, please?
It wasn't to us.
I thought it was so directed at you that it might as well have been, though.
Well, here's the problem with that theory, Blue Gal. Today is a big day for me.
I know. You got a Christmas present.
Matthew Dowd blocked me today.
Finally.
I
thought he'd done that a long time ago,
Matthew Dowd and Ron Fournier are basically two drunks that lean on each other, and two centrist drunks that lean on each other. And Matthew Dowd I'll just call him Matthew Fournier from now on. That'll probably save time.
That's easier. Yeah.
Matthew Dowd was on and on about how we should, how awful Donald Trump is. And when someone says, maybe he wasn't worse than Hillary, maybe there was some. His answer was, let the Clinton stuff go. Trump is president-elect. Let's concentrate on that and future leaders, not the past.
Wow.
And I was like, that is a textbook example of iron rule of David Brooks.
Yeah. You're not allowed to talk about what I said or how many times I mentioned the emails.
Because the past, and I tweeted back to him very politely, let's forget about the past equals let's all agree not to mention how horribly wrong I was.
Yep.
That's what that really
and
that,
and my culpability for this monster in the White House. Absolutely. That's
and
what it is. Yep.
He blocked me immediately.
Yeah.
So Mr. Fournier's post was not available to me visually, but he is at this point really just an algorithm. Just a both sider is spewing 8 lines of computer code. Whatever soul he had is just gone. And his tweet was very simple. It's that Trump's equal Clinton's.
That's it. That's what it was. Trump's equal Clinton's.
That's it. It was about there was this back and forth about Eric Trump and the charity and blah, 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 blah. And basically the Clinton Foundation, the Trump Foundation, the Clintons and Trumps are just the same.
Exactly
just
the same.
And here's the thing, though. Tomorrow.
Yep.
And January 1st and February 1st and this time next year, Ron Fournier will have a job.
Yeah.
Matthew Dowd will have a job. David Brooks will have a job. Michael Burson will have a job. all of these clowns, all of these incredibly dishonest, disloyal, un-American, backstabbing scum will all have a job.
Yeah.
A major job in major media, which means the problem is not any one of them. The problem is Jeff Zucker, Phil Griffin, the owners of the New York Times, Andy Lack, and those people. Those people who are making strategic decisions to keep horribly dishonest hacks on board, they're the problem. Anyway, that's the end of my little soapbox.
Well, I had a winger just to add to the evidence against the mainstream media's culpability for what has happened to this country.
Yeah.
Someone as proof that Hillary is just as corrupt sent me a New York Times article.
Yeah.
Which had in it, I mean, it, I was glad they sent it to me. I will say that, because it was a New York Times article about how Hillary Clinton and the uranium deal in Russia.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
She, well, she personally loaded up as airline transport full of uranium that she owned and shipped it to Moscow without anyone's approval, without anyone saying anything. Yeah, I remember that very well.
Yep. And so this article was I want to find the title of it for you because the title was telling. But it was a quote and based on research from Clinton Cash, from the author of Clinton Cash.
Yes, the very credible author of Clinton.
Yeah. And it was in the New York Times using that as a reference. Mm-hmm. And then here it is. I'm sorry. Excuse me. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I wasn't prepared for this, but the article entitled Cash Flow to Clinton Foundation Amid M-I-A-M-I-D, Russian Uranium, blah, 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 blah.
Uh-huh.
As if amid is causation.
Sure.
And I did say, you know, amid used as causation, you did not just send me a Clinton Cash bullshit sourced by the New York Times. And the article says, whether the donations played any role in the approval of the uranium deal, the donation to Clinton Foundation, is unknown.
Uh-huh.
But the title of the article says it's amid, you know, amid. You can't have an amid, right?
You know, geek out. I've done whole seminars on amid.
On amid, and this is from April. This is from April 2015. They hammered away on this crap for months and months and months and months without any evidence. And the person that sent this to me, and after I really pushed back with my bulldozer going full blast, said, well, that quote you sent me from the article doesn't disprove what I said.
Yeah.
Now, I just went back and said, the burden of proof is on the prosecutors.
Right.
You have how many Republicans spending, and I went and looked it up, the Clinton investigations since Travelgate, which I think was the first one, have cost the American taxpayer $200 million.
Yeah, it's
which
one of our...
ironically is the amount that our new Secretary of State owns in ExxonMobil stock. Did you know that? Isn't that ironic?
Know that.
I love numbers.
Well, it's only, I believe it's only a tenth as much as our president-elect paid out in his fraud settlement case.
Oh, yeah. Well,
so, you know, there's that.
You know,
but
numbers.
Witch hunts are the favorite Republican indoor sport, and they're cheap, and they're easy. It makes it easy for lazy, incompetent, sold out reporters to not do their jobs. Just report, you know, just whatever's dribbles across my page today. We'll just say that this, and we'll juxtapose it with some imaginary position from the left and call it a news article. And you can.
Well, but the whole thing about this that underlies this whole article is, oh my God, Hillary Clinton is doing business with Vladimir Putin.
Right.
And pay for play with Vladimir Putin.
Right.
And how dare she?
Exactly.
That's, so, you know, that, yeah. So, yeah, mad.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and, mad.
And this is where we say this every week, and we mean it every week, at least I do. Well, I say it. My wife is a much better person than me. But we have to get over the quaint concept that we're dealing with people who can be appealed to by
with
getting
reason.
Their conscience by pointing out that. But this is the exact fucking opposite of what you said last week.
But this is why I just keep hammering on Social Security and Medicare.
Yes.
And Obamacare to a certain extent.
Yes.
Is that you will get their attention because they are tuned into what's in it for me.
Right.
And where's mine? Everybody's on an airplane waiting for their bad food to show up, and it's where's mine?
Not to be crass, but this is the caskets coming back from Iraq.
Yeah.
This is why George Bush did not want caskets photographed coming back from his war.
Yep.
Because suddenly people might get interested in that. Wait a minute, now it's real.
Yeah.
Now kids from my community are dying, and I'd really like to know why.
Mm-hmm.
This, you know, they do not count on the vast bulk of the people in this country to give a rat's ass about anything. And remember that most people didn't vote,
or
a substantial plurality of people didn't vote. I doubt they're even aware there was an election. They're just not home anymore upstairs. They're gone. And of the people who are left, half of them don't give a shit about this country. Really, I mean, I've said this before, really hate this country.
Yep.
And really, it is partially incredibly sad, but also somewhat satisfying to watch as people online wake up to the fact that, holy shit, these are spiteful, vicious assholes who just did this to make you cry.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't give a shit about the air or the water, unless it's theirs.
Right.
They don't give a shit about your health care, but they care about theirs.
Right.
And these are the people who are waking slowly up to the fact that they voted away their own health care.
Exactly.
And their own benefits and their own doctor and their own women's health centers.
Yeah. And they've been doing this since before Reagan.
Right.
So, I mean, this is the thing that just amazes me is Reagan was reelected after destroying unions.
Yes.
You know, this is not complicated. They just keep doing it.
Right.
So you wanted to talk about this Planned Parenthood panel discussion, right? This vote, what was it again that happened?
Oh, there was a, well, actually this goes rather well with the idea that these people are trapped in their own ideology.
Uh-huh.
They can't get out of it because there was this interesting article by Michelle Goldberg in Slate about these focus groups that were conducted.
And she is a women's healthcare expert, wrote a book about abortion overseas. And how worldwide bans on abortion, punishing women who've had abortions in Central America, et cetera. Very good writer. And I always enjoy her when she's on MSNBC.
And she said something that I agree with, which was one of Hillary Clinton's mistakes was not binding Donald Trump to the Republican Party.
Yep.
Thinking that if I just split them off, you know, then I can get Republican women to vote for me.
Yep.
No. What you did was legitimize all the bullshit that he's spewing.
Yeah.
You told them in a weird way that it's okay not to take him seriously.
And it's okay to be a Republican, which
it's okay.
Also alienates your own base. And she did that also while a core part of her platform was the repeal of the Hyde Amendment.
Yeah.
And the fact that people could Google that and actually find out, yes, she is in favor of repealing the Hyde Amendment, means she's a baby killer.
Right.
And there are still people on Facebook today who, if you are still having these arguments on Facebook, I'm not, but I've witnessed them. Well, you know, I'm not going to vote for her because she's a baby killer. So everything else is nothing else matters. You know, I'm done. And it doesn't matter how many babies George W. Bush killed. It just, you know, that doesn't matter.
These focus groups were very depressing.
And these are Planned Parenthood focus groups.
These are Planned Parenthood. They were sponsored by, but very carefully conducted so that they were entirely neutral. And they were all voters, Trump supporters, and so forth. And it was just, you know, women saying that they didn't think a woman should be president because you know how emotional women get. You know, I get emotional. Who just think Hillary's corrupt and Donald Trump's honest, who just nothing. No amount of information is going to penetrate their diamond hard shield of stupid.
Yeah.
They're just not going to, they don't want to hear from anybody who tells them anything they don't want to believe. And they're not going to listen.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were the ones who thought that, no, I get to keep Planned Parenthood. I mean, this whole idea of repealing abortion, well, that's not really going to happen because, you know, he's obviously kidding. And they were just like, you know, yay.
But they don't believe in abortion, right? At the same time.
Well, some of them.
Technically?
Some of them do. Or some of them want. A lot of them like Planned Parenthood.
It is the idea that abortion is okay when it's rape, Life of the Mother and Me, or My Family. Again, it's like air and water. I don't give a shit about anybody else. I don't want to pay for anybody else's stuff, but don't take away mine.
But he's not really going to defund Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, because I use that for my pap smear.
Can hold up a sheet of paper that says, here is him saying he's, and it was like, oh, you know how he is.
He won't get that. That's what drives me so crazy is I do hear this argument of, well, he says that, and maybe Paul Ryan really wants to do that, but they won't get that.
They won't do
it's like,
that.
So you're depending on Democrats to defend you, to build the wall against what the people you vote for are arguing about.
Sure. They have always secretly depended on Democrats to not let their own crazy party go too far.
To let their own crazy vote become real.
And to be mom. Because you can shit all over mom, but, you know, at 4 a.m, if you're drunk and in jail, who do you call? Yeah. And you can yell at her and scream at her and abuse her and treat her like just garbage. But at the end of the day, she'll take you back. She'll protect you. She'll feed you. She'll put a roof over your head.
And
that is the ungrateful, petulant, bigoted children.
Abuser.
That is the Republican Party. There's no one left in the Republican Party but people like that and people who are too stupid to see that the other people in the party are like that. There are no reasonable Republicans left. There are no rational Republicans left. There are no thoughtful, conscientious, prudent Republicans left. They're gone. And that's kind of healthy in a way because we've cleared the Republican Party out of anyone that I feel any need to feel any compassion for or fellow feeling towards. I would like their children to have good schools. I would like them to have health care. But I can't.
And that is my approach always when I encounter one of them, which is not to say, ha ha, you voted for this. You're going to get what you deserve. It's I, as a liberal, hope that you are able to keep your health care.
Right. And I do.
I, as a liberal, hope that they do not cut your Social Security by 35% and deny you all future cost of living adjustments, which is what the current bill plans to do.
Yeah, but this Cleavon Little strategy of putting a gun to their own head and holding themselves hostage.
Yeah, well, that's their business.
They're holding the rest of us hostage too.
Yeah.
But again, and this is something we chatted about a little bit earlier in the week. This cage they themselves, because all the post-election studies showed that Hillary Clinton did best in places where the economy is doing best, and that places that have just been abandoned since the 80s,
West Virginia,
since we decided, you know, we're gonna, and this was not, this has been going on for decades.
Yeah,
we're gonna outsource jobs, we're gonna outsource whole industries. It's just cheaper to do that. We're gonna bust up unions. We're gonna basically immiserate you. Was all applauded by these people. These are people who loved Reagan, you know, when he was getting rid of the unions, and loved it when they could get their shit cheaper from Walmart. And now there's nothing left for them to do. Now they've hit that part of their life. And believe me, I'm a member of that cohort where they're old enough where they start getting sick. Things start failing. They cannot find another job that pays a fraction of what they used to make. There's no particular program on the horizon to help them. So here's their problem. That is the description of a welfare queen. That is the description of, because they can't pull themselves
up. In their past arguments, absolutely.
Sure.
Right.
They cannot pull themselves up by their own bootstraps. They cannot make a life for themselves. They cannot put a roof over their family's head. And for the last 30 years, they have been saying that people who are like that are lazy and shiftless and black. And they do it because they're lazy and shiftless and black. And the solution is to kick them harder, make them suffer more, take more shit away from them, take their goddamn Obama phones away from them. That'll wake them up. That'll get them off their asses. And now their own rhetoric is coming back to kill them. Because there is no solution to them other than a rather substantial change in our economy and how we make things, how we sell things, and how we distribute income. They have choices. One of their choices is to vote for Donald Trump, is to just say, fuck it. Give me a fascist. Because at least maybe he'll go out, you know, he'll seize that oil from Iraq and bring it back here and make coal magically appear in the coal mines again. Or they take drugs.
Yeah. Yeah.
They have become everything that they have hated in every other social group.
You're an unemployed drug addict. Think about that.
They become unemployed.
And I am not lacking in compassion and sympathy for the families and the people that are going through that. And I definitely hold big pharma accountable and government accountable for what is happening.
Well, as a liberal, you know. You would.
That's what a liberal would say.
Their problem is they don't work hard enough, Blue Gal.
Uh-huh.
They don't want to work.
Well, anyone who is not their color and their people
Rust
and
Belt,
their tribe.
Rust Belt white people don't want to work, Blue Gal.
Yeah.
They don't want to work.
That's why the prisons are full of those other people
Rust Belt
who
white,
got arrested with pot on them, right?
Rust Belt white people want to stay home, take drugs, and have babies. And have someone else take care of them. They're basically lazy and they're shiftless.
And goddamn Barack Obama for pardoning all those drug addicts.
Mm-hmm.
I know. But it's true.
Every time they walk, they look in the mirror. This is why they don't look in mirrors. What they see staring out at them is every caricature of every one of those people that they've spent their life sneering and hating and looking down on. And now it's them. They have become that thing. And what are their alternatives?
Mm-hmm.
One, deny. Just shut all higher brain functions down and refuse to remember what happened in the past. Refuse to just live any place other than right here and right now, which is a Trump voter. You know, they will deny at the end of a sentence the thing they said at the beginning of the sentence.
Yep.
They are no longer higher brain functioning primates. Or they get high all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They kill themselves slowly with drugs.
Yeah. Well, and that's why the death rate and the life expectancy is going down and the death rate's going up. And white men, like you said, of your age cohort, are finding out that they can just give up.
Right.
And it's a tragedy. It really is a tragedy.
It is. And there is a Ray Bradbury story.
Mm-hmm.
I will just briefly mention it because I mentioned on this podcast before about the last man on Mars who was stranded there for decades. And as a young man, the ships all left and he was a kind of an asshole as a young man. So he spent a lot of time automating various cities. He rigged up the radio station to play. He rigged up the intercom system to play. He rigged up basically the entire thing to simulate life.
Mm-hmm.
The problem was, as a young man, he was an asshole.
Yeah.
So now he's an old man. And he starts getting these urgent messages saying, the rescue ship has arrived. The rescue ship is here. It's on the other side of Mars. You got to get there quick. You better just spend all effort that you possibly can. Use up all your gasoline. Use up all your fuel. And haul ass over there because they're leaving right now. And he hauls ass over the horizon and goes to where the ship is. And there's no ship there. It's his younger self, his younger automated self. And I believe he collapses and dies of a heart attack.
Oh.
And he kills himself. He kills himself because as a young man, he was an asshole. Yeah. And he set up a system designed to punish and kill the weak and the powerless. And then he became weak and powerless. And his own cruelty ate him alive. And that's what they're going through right now.
Yeah.
And they would rather stay high or vote for a fascist than do the third thing, which is the hardest thing of all. Admit they were wrong. They cannot do that because then their identity just disintegrates because that's all they are at this point. Bigot and ignorant Trump moron.
All right. I'm going to get you off your soapbox now.
All right. Talk about Newt Gingrich.
If you want to go at it, we'll talk about Newt Gingrich next.
Sure. Well, Newt Gingrich is just proposing to make Trump an emperor.
Yeah.
Flat out. You're just pardon everybody all the time for everything. Break a law. Fuck it. Your kids want to work in government. Great. Let them. And then just pardon them.
Mm-hmm.
And okay.
Drain the swamp. Don't drain the swamp. I'm sorry. I meant drain the swamp. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he backtracked on that real quick because they are pushing the envelope over and over again to see just how far they can get with their stupid voters, right?
Yeah.
And when they find out, oh, no, you can't back away from that wall. Somebody's going to just explode if you do that.
Right. Got to.
And Hal Sparks this week talked about in a very careful way. I was really impressed with how he put it, and I can't remember exactly the way he put it. But it had to do with the fact that there is a certain strain of Republican voter that is armed and dangerous.
Right. Yes, he did.
And if you don't consider that as part of the package of how you conduct yourself as a Republican,
mm-hmm.
that they will turn on you and there is a danger there that is always in the back of your mind. And I'm not threatening anyone, and I'm not suggesting that anyone threaten anyone at all.
Nope.
But regardless of whether that threat is conscious or not, Donald Trump is pushing and testing the waters every day. Can I get away with backing off against all the crazy shit I said during the campaign?
Right.
And I really didn't like that, drain the swamp. I don't like that. That's not a good line. I'm not going to use that anymore. And so Newt Gingrich comes out and says, yeah, he's not going to use that anymore. Well, the crowd that Donald Trump wants to make happy, the mob has to be happy, doesn't like that. So, oh, no. Well, never mind. We're definitely going to drain the swamp. Oh, yeah. You know, with our Goldman Sachs person and our ExxonMobil person and our, you know, he's got a $10 billion cabinet as of this moment. So
the whole drain the swamp line.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you heard that, just that evolved out of nowhere.
Right.
He did it and somebody suggested it and he thought it was corny. And then he tried it and they liked it. And he said they love it. And then, oh, my God, they really love it. He just kept repeating it.
Yeah.
And then
I like it, but the people seem to like it, so we're going to use it.
We're going to use it. And that's literally, it's a focus group tested bumper sticker that became public policy because the mob liked it.
The mob liked it. And this really is, I mean, it is the one element of genius in the Trump organization, which is, we have a scripted reality show here, folks. It's called Celebrity Apprentice White House Edition. That's what I keep calling it.
Yeah.
And we're going to have just a drama script every day. And if the drama doesn't go, the narrative doesn't go the way I want, I'm going to send a tweet about nukes.
Right.
And that'll create a completely different set of drama that I can then use or not use. If I don't like that, I'll tweet something else.
Right.
And I don't need a White House. I don't need a White House press corps.
No.
I don't need. I'm going to script this and it's going to be my show.
Well, and that's the back end of that. Mm-hmm. Is Newt Gingrich saying essentially that the president pardoned power?
You're fading
so he should
out.
Just go ahead and use it.
Say that again.
Oh,
say
I'm sorry.
Again, please.
The back end of that is Newt Gingrich saying that essentially the Trump's pardon power is unlimited.
Right. Oh,
and so it doesn't matter what he does. He can just pardon everybody if he wants.
And yes, constitutionally that is true.
Yeah.
And if the Congress and the media just let you.
Yes.
Then it is unlimited.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. And if the mob, I mean, the mob is a part of that. Absolutely.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah, it's,
the mob is Rome and Rome is the mob.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There's the title of our podcast this week.
It's the least I can do, baby.
Let's do Bible Bitch.
Oh, I was going to say that leads us to Anna Navarro, but let's do Bible Bitch first.
Let's do Bible Bitch first.
Yes.
This is just something I've been thinking about all week and we have gotten lots of Christmas cards from people. And what's funny is you usually go to the P.O. box and pick up the Christmas cards and you'll say, well, we got this card. And I look at the return address. I go, oh, it's Harriet. Oh, it's Bob. Oh, it's, and it's all people that, it's David.
It's Barack. Barack.
No, it's not Barack.
it's George Soros. Thank you, George.
There's one of them where I look at and I go, it's that son of a bitch.
Yeah, we know that.
And you know who I'm talking about.
I know exactly who you're talking about.
Somebody we're in touch with. Someone we have never met face to face.
Yeah.
But who is a good friend because of the podcast.
Right.
And
well, let's face it, he's a good friend because he's never met me face to face.
He would say the same thing to you, too. We were talking about a guy named Bill.
Uh-huh.
And what was so funny about that, I don't think Bill would mind me saying this. Bless his heart, his wife has not been well. And he's been keeping me in touch with how she's doing. And I was driving back from dropping a kid off at school and driving home. And a happy song that I really like came on the radio. And do you ever have that thing where you have this problem in the back of your head and it's kind of weighing on you? And all of a sudden you realize you've forgotten about it. And then it comes back to you like, oh, no, I really need to be worried about my mom being sick or my, you know, there's something else. But I was singing this happy song. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, Bill's wife is, and I went, oh, wait, no, she's better now. He told me she's better now. She's home now. Everything's good. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, Oh.
Yes.
And I realized, wow, I really care about these people.
Yes, you
like,
do.
They're on my heart. You know, it's not just in my head. They're on my heart that I'm thinking about. Is she well? Is she going to be okay? Is everything going to be okay? And it's like, oh. And that is true of so many of you out there that who are in touch with us. That it's like, oh, look, it's a letter from, so-and-so. You know, this person. And somebody emailed me today just a funny thing about Christmas and Mr. Robot. And it was just one of our listeners emailing me. And I was able to write back to him right away and said, you know, your Christmas card came back to me undeliverable. I don't have the right address for you. Can you send me the new one? It was like, this is a person I've never met before, you know, but I know his name. I know and we just know so many of you personally, yeah. And we yeah. feel that way about you. And so.
Well, and we got an email just the other day for Junior Dude.
Junior Dude got an email. Yes.
I know. I love you both, but this is not for you.
This is not for you. This is for Junior Dude. And it was a complaint about how we talked about the possum on the front porch. Now, I do want to thank our listeners because we have had emails this week about defending the possum.
Yeah.
Defending Bernie Sanders. Defending Hillary Clinton.
Yes.
Defending Barack Obama.
Yes.
Defending the DNC, not defending the DNC. And we have not had one message or one email or one Facebook comment or anything from anyone about, oh, my God, you let your cats on the dining room table. So you guys are our kind of people.
Yes.
That's all I have to say about that. And like we would be able to prevent them from getting up on the table. That just doesn't happen.
Whole day job. And I don't have time for that.
Yeah, we don't have time for that. But so Bible Bitch. Let's do Bible Bitch.
Yeah.
This is from Matthew 5. And it's just I've been thinking about all of you and thinking about how the next 4 years are dark times. And I went back and listened to our podcast that was on right after the election when it was such a hard night and so dark. So many people have written and said something to the effect of, my plan for next year is to give money to the ACLU, to
yeah.
get involved in local politics, to make sure my congressman knows how I feel about Obamacare, to make sure that our governor is aware that my Democratic governor is aware that I have his back on Obamacare, or that I have his back, his or her back on immigrants. And, you know, my state is protecting immigrants or my college is protecting immigrants. And really hearing from a lot of people that there is after the depression of all of it, that there's a real resolve, right?
Uh-huh.
And so today's Bible Bitch is from Matthew 5. It's Jesus talking to us. And the King James Version says, ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. The Message, which is the modern translation.
The hippie translation.
The hippie Bible says, this is 14 to 16, Matthew 5. Here's another way to put it. You're here to be light, bringing out the God colors in the world. God is not a secret to be kept. We're going public with this, as public as a city on a hill. If I make you light bearers, you don't think I'm going to hide you under a bucket, do you? I'm putting you on a light stand. Now that I've put you there on a hilltop, on a light stand, shine. Keep open house. Be generous with your lives. By opening up to others, you'll prompt people to open up with God, this generous Father. And a lot of translations people will hippie it up even more and say Father, Mother. And I don't object to that.
No.
This generous Father and Mother. So I think of all of you guys as a light in my life.
Yeah.
While we are going through this dark time. And I appreciate so much you sharing with us how you are planning to let your light shine and how you are resolved to resist the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to thank you for that.
Well,
we hear from so many people saying, oh, I need your podcast so bad. It's like, we need you right back.
Yeah.
We need you right back.
And once again, it falls to the dirty hippies to save civilization.
Yes.
Because we always do.
As it did in the time of Jesus, it does now.
Yeah. As it did in the time of the Irish.
And I learned something about the Christmas story that I did not know. Swaddling clothes.
Don't give the ending away.
No, I won't. But swaddling clothes.
Uh-huh.
Swaddling clothes is an indication to the shepherds uh-huh. that the baby is not high class.
Right.
Isn't that amazing? I had never thought of that. And as we've been discussing it in various Bible study stuff, I have learned that swaddling clothes are what peasant women wrap their babies in.
Uh-huh.
It is strips of cloth, not silk, not, you know, not a woven.
No.
It's recycled. It's recycled fabric. And swaddling clothes, when the angel comes down in the story to the shepherds and says, you will find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, that is a clue to the shepherds that they don't have to, bathe and wash and get cleaned up because a king has been born. You will find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes and lying in a manger. That is a sign to them that this is someone at your level of society.
The shepherds were not high-born.
No.
These were dirty, dirt-poor, working people.
Subsistence farmers.
Exactly.
I mean, that's, so...
And that's why so many metaphors in the Bible are agricultural.
Right, right.
Because it makes sense to them. That is something that fishing and sheep and mustard plants and on are all very, very specific to the flora and fauna that they would understand.
Right, right. So I thought that was a beautiful part of the story to think about the angel knowing to tell them. And again, you know, you can think of this as all metaphor. You can think of this as all fable if you want to. That's fine by me. But when I think about it, I think about it as a story of love and a love for all humankind. And so this universal love of God comes and says to the shepherds who are lowly in status, in income, in class, in
everything,
in the standing in the world, this babe who is coming to save you is of your stock,
right?
And you do not need to be afraid or feel insufficient to meet with this child. But so yeah, I just
go check him out.
Beautiful.
Go check him out. He's one of you guys.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, he's in a stable. Go on. Yeah. So that was lovely. That was lovely to find out.
Yeah.
All right. You want to talk about Anna Navarro? We're coming up on time. And
I understand that.
I told you that we were going to keep it shorter today because Christmas is here.
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll skip Priorities USA.
Yeah, we're going to skip that. The battle over the DNC and who's going to hold the it's going to be very interesting. Everything really comes down right now to who's got a job and who doesn't in DC, right?
And we
have to figure out where Barack Obama is going to wind up. And it seems to me, I said to someone today, that should he decide to do the state parties and the redistricting stuff that he says he wants to do, then he is de facto head of the DNC. I mean, that's up to him.
Uh-huh.
But people that are spending lots and lots of time and emotional investment on who is DNC chair, what is Priorities USA going to do, what is OFA going to do, go have fun with that.
That's
a soap opera that right this minute I don't want to get involved in. You and I have been talking about gubernatorial races for Illinois.
Yes.
And I do want you to mention what our governor hedge fund did this week.
Wrote himself a check for $50 million.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a way of saying if you can't, that's the ante. That's the opening bit. If you
I put that on the table.
If you can't call me, at least raise me if you like. If you can't call me, then don't even bother running. That was a way to tell Chris Kennedy and Andy Menar and J.B. Pritzker, if you can't match that, then stay the hell out of my way. Because it's just about money. At this point,
it's
just about
who can buy the office.
Who can buy the office? Who can buy the down ticket races needed to put through my agenda? It's that fucking simple. It doesn't need to be. What it should be is, votes and mobilization and get out the vote and so forth. And it can be that. But if the Democratic Party is not interested in investing anything at the state level, then that's the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
So anyway.
And getting people out in a midterm or in a election that's any time other than the presidential race is hard.
It is. And it shouldn't be.
And it shouldn't.
Because it's an hour of your goddamn time on a Tuesday. Right. And it isn't physically hard.
It doesn't have to be Tuesday anymore, Dirt Flat.
Right, well, that's true.
That's the amazing thing, too.
It's an hour of your time, period.
Yep.
and it requires a minimal amount of study. You know, just call me up. I'll tell you who to vote for. It's easy. I used to do that in Chicago all the time. That was part of my job. I wrote a little post this week called The Lonely Political Grave of Anna Navarro.
Yeah.
Which is a line out of Kill Bill. Mm-hmm. Because Anna Navarro is a Republican strategist who woke up, mm-hmm. Last year to the fact that her
party... and she woke for a very specific reason.
Yes,
her
did.
Job, and I think we've talked about her before, uh-huh. her job was a Republican consultant to help congressmen who are running as Republicans reach out to Hispanic voters.
Right.
And Donald Trump destroyed her career with acid.
He did. And women.
And women.
Hispanic woman.
Hispanic and women.
And Donald Trump decided that he would attack both
those
groups.
Pour a bucket
groups.
Of acid on her
right.
job, on bucket. What she was set to do.
Right.
And on the part of her party that recognizes that that's the future of anything in right. national politics.
Yeah.
So the damage that he has done to her personally and the damage that she perceives that he has done to the long-term prospects of the Republican Party, both of those things are very real.
Yes, but only to her. But only
well,
to her.
Because... her and I think Mitt Romney. I mean, in spite of his, you know, embarrassment, we talked about that before. There are people in the Republican Party who acknowledge, look, we're done after this generation. We're just done. Because we burned the bridge to the Hispanic population, and that's the future. So
yeah, but there are enough people like Kayleigh McEnany, who are perfectly content mm-hmm. to have President Pussy Grabber, a bigot and a liar and a demagogue and a lunatic mm-hmm. as president, mm-hmm. who are perfectly okay. The entire Republican Party, as far as I can tell, has capitulated. There's a couple of holdouts, but that's pretty much it, because they are all worms. I mean, if you're a Republican, you don't have a conscience, so this is not really a problem. And that
we are seeing though, you know, that the people who are so craven as to never see past their own six-figure paycheck
uh-huh.
at all. And like you say, I don't know. What if Donald Trump had not insulted Hispanics and women? What if he had just come on the scene and insulted his fellow candidates and become president? Would Anna Navarro be on board with that or not?
That's a great question. I know. Yeah, she would. Sure, she would.
Yeah.
Sure, she would. Or she'd be playing. And this is her problem. This is my problem with her. Uh-huh. She was on the Keeping It 1600 podcast,
uh-huh.
which is a pretty good podcast, except when they have Chuck Todd on. And then,
well, then it's a very revealing podcast,
it
though.
Is. It's very, as I say on my blog, they put on big fluffy mittens and they bat each other harmlessly around.
Jack, you're so funny.
No, John, you're funny. No, you're funnier. But it's just depressing as shit to hear these guys who are actually serious analysts and Democrats sort of roll over for Chuck Todd because we don't want to be mean to him because we want to be on a show someday. But they had Anna Navarro on and they were very nice to her. And she came on and rolled right through Donald Trump and what happened to her party. And oh, my God. And that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? Your come to Jesus moment was about 20 years too late, Ms. Navarro.
Yeah.
And I don't really care about your situation. You were okay with everything your party was doing right up until the point where it inconvenienced you professionally, personally, and then it became awful. And the thing that I have noticed, and I'm sure every one of our listeners has noticed, if you are listening at all, is how depressingly predictable these what I call Judgment Day Republicans. They all sound the same. They all sound like liberals 20 years ago.
Well, and you and I have been talking about how convenient it is that now that Harry Reid is leaving office, he's got a tremendous amount of honest yeah. explanations for how things really are,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Suddenly he gets real brave.
It's true of many, many people.
Oh, true. Yeah. No, I don't disagree with that.
If you and I had any money or skin in the game, we'd probably be just as craven. I'm not going to claim to any greater morality than they do.
Yeah, but I'm not a Republican.
No, you're not. Harry Reid's not a Republican either.
And Harry Reid, you know, has said these things sort of under his breath and quietly. Yeah. And now that he has nothing else to lose, he has his pension, that he can say whatever he wants. He really goes after him hammer and tongs, and good for him. But
the only thing that I really do admire Harry Reid about is he said he'd rather cut off his limbs than become a lobbyist. Yeah. So
we'll see.
We'll see what happens, Harry. We're holding you to it.
But these, I mean, I include Charlie Sykes in this group and a few others, people who have been Republicans. And here's the thing. If you've been a Republican for the last 20 years and successful uh-huh. in that party, on that side uh-huh. of the fence, then you have been basically made a dollar off of insulting and slandering and lying about people like me.
Yep. And black people and women.
Exactly.
And gays. Yep.
On down
and,
the list.
And
that Judgment Day has come, and you want to cram into the church real quick and confess. Now, mm-hmm. you sound like liberals did 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Here's the problem. You're ripping off our critique of your party, our vocabulary about your party, our analysis of your party, our diagnostics of your party, and never acknowledging that we exist at all.
Yeah.
You're just suddenly, oh my God, where do these bigots come from? Well, you've been living among them for your entire adult life. You just were cool with it until it hurt you personally.
And professionally, so, yeah.
I have no pity for these people. But they would be useful for one thing. Mm-hmm. If Ana Navarro, and you should listen to the Keeping It 1600, because at some point she also goes, you know, I blame the media. You know, people, people living inside their own little bubbles, you know, and both sides do it. You know, both sides do it. You know, this is a problem on both sides. And she said, you know, this is what, and then she goes into this silly rhetorical nonsense about what the Republican Congress should do.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like this respectful silence. And then I forget which one of the guys says this, but he said like something to the effect of, okay, that works if you have a conscience. But what if you don't have a conscience? It's like, wake the fuck up. This is your party. Your party is dead. Your party is Rush Limbaugh. Your party is Newt Gingrich. Your party is Donald Trump. They don't have a conscience. Now what's your big fucking plan?
Yeah.
My plan is to be a consultant and to run around the edges of
and have a job on CNN for the rest of my life.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So here's the only thing that Ana Navarro or Charlie Sykes are good for. We need to know what's wrong with your brain that let you be this stupid and this deluded and this self-involved for so long. What's the mechanism inside your head that let you ignore the fact that your party was turning into a bunch of goblins and monsters until the very last minute? And what was it that finally shattered your conditioning? Because if we could replicate that process, we might be able to extract some other people from it. Mm-hmm. And the only other thing you're good for is, unless you have the dirt on people in your party and you're willing to talk,
about it.
If you know who's fucking who bribed who threatened who's had an abortion, then you're useful to me. But unless you can be a soldier on my side, you're cannon fodder. I don't give a shit what happens to you. I'm terribly sorry you wasted 20 years of your life. I'm terribly sorry it took you until you're 40 or 50 years old to wake the fuck up to what you were doing. And great, good for you that you're able to parlay that. Charlie Sykes has a book deal, by the way.
Oh, sure.
You're able to parlay that into more revenue by, again, walking on the backs of the people who got there before you.
Yeah.
But I have no use for you. Your value to me is zero unless you can provide actual tactical value to the battle ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Other than yelling shit that we've been yelling for 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's my take on Ana Navarro, Charlie Sykes, and...
And the rest of them.
And we're now.
We're now there.
Well, we have.
And I can't hear you now.
I went very quiet there.
You did. Oh, okay.
For 55 minutes, I went, shut up.
Yep. She's going to cut them off. I'm going to cut you off. We want to just point out to everyone that North Carolina reminded Democrats that they can't trust Republicans about anything.
Never get off the boat. Never get off the fucking boat. Never trust Republicans. They will stab you in the back every time. Democrats are weak and vacillating. Republicans will stab you in the back every time. You cannot trust them until the party's burned to the ground and rebuilt.
And the idea that you trust, I'm sorry, but the idea that you trusted the people who had already that week called a special session for disaster relief and turned it into a way to steal power from your governor. And then, oh, well, we'll trust you on this. That was just stupid. Talk for just a minute. Protests That Works Moral Mondays. I do want to get that in. Reverend Barber.
Reverend Barber in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. North Carolina.
Moral Mondays was really smart. There's a lot of ways to ineffectually protest things.
Mm-hmm.
Wiggle your fingers, wave some signs. There were four people standing outside the state house in Illinois about, you know, trying to convince the electors. Four people.
Yeah.
Four people. Yeah. What does that tell you about democracy? But Reverend Barber figured out, the people who helped him organize this figured out that the protest itself has to be the story.
Mm-hmm.
So every freaking Monday, we will be out here protesting. And we're going to be a group of people who have a variety of interests. So maybe one day we'll protest voting rights, and next week we'll do LGBT, and next week we'll do something else. But we as a group will be out here protesting because we have a common enemy and a common theme. And we will persist and be loud, and we'll make the fact of our protest a national story by virtue of persistence and loud repetition. That works. I'm not saying it changes the world. I'm not saying it solves every problem. But if you want to know what an effective protest looks like, it's one that's consistent, persistent, has a broad coalition, and doesn't go away.
Mm-hmm.
That's what works.
Mm-hmm. And what happens also is when you see priests getting arrested,
yeah.
I mean, this is what it takes, folks.
Yeah.
It takes good people in the community that people know, who know that they are good people. They're on your side the rest of the time.
Uh-huh.
And that's you.
Yeah.
Out there in your community, being that person, being that neighbor, all of a sudden, oh, look, she's also doing this thing. Maybe I should be aware that, and this is I've been much more active on Facebook this week just because it's occurred to me and has been pointed out to me how many people in this town are on Facebook,
yep.
How many people locally are on Facebook,
yep.
Looking at their grandchildren or whatever. And the only things I talk about, the only political things I talk about on Facebook are Social Security and Medicare and a little bit of Obamacare, and that's it.
Yep.
And I am sharing links to not to Daily Kos, not to Crooks and Liars, not to, you know, Radical Liberal Weekly. I'm finding the articles in Forbes.
Uh-huh.
I'm finding the articles in mainstream Newsweek, you know, mm-hmm. Time and Newsweek, mm-hmm. things that are familiar to old people mm-hmm. and saying, here's a link about what that specific Republican plan is for Social Security and Medicare. Here's the specific plan for what will happen to your Medicare, to your hospital, if Obamacare is repealed. Here's what's going to happen to Springfield Clinic, local, if Obamacare is just repealed without any, you know, buffer or anything happening to make it, to improve it.
Yep.
If they're just going to drop the bottom out of it, two hospitals in this town are going to cut back their staff by 50%.
Yeah.
So, you know, are you ready for that? And by doing that, I am building a coalition. I'm building an interest. I'm building something where it's almost, I hate to say this, but it's almost taking a page out of the playbook of Republicans against Hillary Clinton,
mm-hmm.
who went for 25 years, we're going to destroy this woman. We're going to destroy this woman. And they just kept at it and kept at it until it was the point where she was covered with scars that they had inflicted on her.
Uh-huh.
And people pointed to the scars and say, see, there must be something wrong.
Yep.
And
Andrew Sullivan, basically.
Right. After all this, you know, but they didn't prosecute her once. They didn't indict her one time.
Right.
They never had enough evidence of criminal intent to indict her even one time. It's all just wasting money to destroy her reputation. And I am taking a page out of that book and with Republicans and Medicare and Social Security. And they're making it easy on me because all I have to do is look at their bills and say, this is what they say they are going to do. And it is what they voted yes on.
Yes.
So in the words of one Republican voter, just Google it.
Just Google it. Just Google it. I saw it on the internet.
So your presence, I mean, let's go back to this. You're the light of the world. Be that one who gives back to the community and at the same time is pointing to what is right.
Are you staying clean for Gene is what you're saying?
Yeah. And I want to thank George Soros.
Yes.
Not for the money he sent us because he never did.
No.
But he has committed to raising $500 million. And he's not going to give all that himself.
No.
But he has committed to raising $500 million to resettle refugees from Syria.
Yeah.
And good
that's
for him.
That's serious money.
That's serious money from serious rich people.
Yep.
And I'm sure he's going to be making phone calls to people who would be qualified, quote unquote, to work in the Trump administration.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
Because they can afford to raise $500 million.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to take that kind of money to handle the humanitarian need of this crisis. And that's another story. That's another conversation for another day, Driftglass.
Yes.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, baby.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website, an Internet Kitty, sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Marcos.
Marcos.
Marcos is a legal immigrant from Baja Sur, Mexico. And as you pointed out, he's a dreamer.
Yes.
He dreams about 16 hours a day.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. We love Marcos. Marcos is adorable. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air unless you say otherwise.
Especially this time of year, because they're
working hard.
Literally neither rain nor sleet nor snow.
Oh my God, this week with the minus zero wind chills and everything,
nice storm.
We still got our mail every day.
Yeah, we did.
Wait a minute, I had to sip some not gourmet coffee. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And don't forget our Amazon link at our website. If you're listening, if you're one of those listeners that listens on a Friday because you just can't wait,
yeah,
and you still have some Amazon, you still have last minute gift giving to do, I do recommend those Amazon electronic gift cards via email.
They're amazing.
Because they get there.
They
get there in an hour.
Boom.
And it doesn't matter that it's Christmas Eve. They don't care.
They don't care.
Just go to our website first.
Yeah.
And click on the Amazon link and give an electronic gift card to somebody.
So easy.
It gets there by email by Christmas morning.
So easy.
And it's so easy. And we get 8% of that.
I know.
When it don't cost you nothing.
Don't cost nothing. Don't hurt nobody.
So,
don't cost nothing.
Yeah. And yeah, gift cards do count. So by all means, those last minute gift cards that go by email are so awesome. And the Amazon ones, you can just do that right there. And we do believe in buying local. And we also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a big box store. Driftglass, we got a box from Amazon this week.
What?
That came anonymously. There was no name on the card. It just said Merry Goddamn Christmas. And it was a book of short stories. Was it Kornbluth?
Yes.
Yes.
It was.
And I just want, there was no name in the box.
No. Well, Kornbluth,
thank you.
But no, I don't think.
Well, Kornbluth was in the box. The book is a collection of Kornbluth's short stories. Fascinating.
Yes.
Preface about how they found out which stories were by Kornbluth, because all these pulp writers were writing under each other's names or under one name, and if you wrote 50 stories that month or 5 stories that month, they'd put them in magazines under different names.
Sure.
And it was all by you, and then the next writer would have 6 more stories and they'd use the same name over again. And so there'd be a story that was by Robert Heinlein and one by Kornbluth, but they were both by Joe Smith. Right?
Uh-huh.
And so it was really forensic how they had to find out which ones were by Kornbluth. Anyway, my point is, when we opened this box and we talked about this book, you and I, for the whole way home, mm-hmm. for probably about half an hour, we sat in the driveway still talking about this amazing science fiction writer who wrote from the age of 15
uh-huh.
until he died of a heart attack at 35.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 20 years of writing,
it
which is as much as anybody gets.
Yeah.
But boy, he was a rocket ship in the sky.
He was amazing output. And really
amazing
good.
Output.
Really just
yep.
good stuff. If he'd been
and
around.
And you were just so damn glad to have this book.
I was.
It really meant a lot to you.
I looked and there were a lot of old favorites in the tables of contents and a bunch of mm-hmm. stuff I'd never read before.
So that didn't go on the shelf right away.
No.
That went over by the bedside.
I claimed it.
And along with, you know, and we have a lot of other people sending us books. I want to always thank Raymond. He always sends us so many good books. And lots of people send us stuff to look at and read. And we appreciate it. But I had to thank that person on the air because right. anonymous box of a great book that you in particular were really glad to own. Now,
I
so.
Wasn't am.
All right. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution. You can, too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you for doing that. Hey, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Oh, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas, but not a Happy New Year. Because
no, we'll do that next week.
We'll do that next week, because we're going to be back next week. No one else will be back next week. Just a reminder, all the other bad boys and girls go on vacation this time of year. They leave you high and dry. But the Professional Left Podcast will be here next week, right on schedule, with a fresh podcast of probably me singing a selection of Tom Waits songs, I'm guessing. I'll be trying to get into my... I'll work on it. I'll gargle with some scotch and I'll work on it.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas. Love you, baby.
I love you, too. Merry Christmas.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Let's think about loving.
Think about loving.
Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Love Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2016, Drift Glass, Blue Gal Podcast.